fighting for America.
You put a Democrat in the office of governor of Idaho, and things will change within 90 days.
Well, yeah, we'll all be worse off, Steve.
Hold on.
Fighting for Idaho.
By the way,
what part of socialism? What part of socialism is not Otter part of?
You know, this is such an optimistic.
Healthcare.
This is such an optimistic.
Healthcare.
Tom,
he gave us
Tom.
Fighting for you.
Gun-toting Pat, what do you have to say here? Hopefully, it's more. Here, hold on. You have to speak into the microphone.
I said if BS was concrete, you'd be a superhighway.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Yes, that sums it up right there. Good Monday morning. Such an eclectic level of talent to choose from our Chick-fil-A broadcast. You want to thank Brad and Amy and the Boise Rescue Mission for having us there. What a wonderful, wonderful event it was on Friday. Great show on Saturday. We'll do our very best to give you one today. Joining us now to talk about all things immigration, all things national security, our great friend Mark Kerkorian from the Centers for Immigration Studies. Mark, good to have you with us once again. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, it looks like ISIS and Ebola have taken the border off the front pages. Are you surprised?
Well, they've sort of taken it off the front pages, but actually they've kind of put it back on, too, because, you know, the big part of the Ebola story is why are we giving visas to people from Liberia and, you know, letting them continue to fly here? Likewise with ISIS. I mean, I think the fears that, you know, ISIS is in Mexico may well be exaggerated, but they're not meaningless. I mean, it's entirely possible. So in a sense, any news item that comes up really does relate to the border as well as to other things.
Well, and this is the funny thing. If I'm ISIS, and I know how porous our border is, if I'm not there now, I'm on my way.
Sure. I mean, you want to be. Now, you know, I think people, maybe overestimate their abilities. I mean, it's not that hard to get the Iraqi army to run away. You know what I mean? So, I have no doubt that they want to be operating in Mexico, and they may well be. And the fact is, we can't wait to find out. Maybe they're just too incompetent to pull it off. But do you really want to trust the, you know, existence of, I don't know, Tucson or Chicago to that assumption? No. The whole point is border control, and really more broadly immigration control, is an insurance policy. And, you know, like most insurance policies, you spend a lot of money and you don't see any result from it. The whole point is, you know, when you really need it, it's got to be there.
Mark, how do we balance that with the forces that you've been fighting for so many years? And that's, well, we're a nation of immigrants. It's racist to even stop anybody. America doesn't have any values or ethics or laws. We need to just bring everybody in and pay for them.
Well, I mean, we just keep pushing back. Frankly, most of the public doesn't believe in any of that nonsense, which is why I think it's a big part of the reason that the open borders people failed to get that monstrosity of an amnesty through that they passed last year. It passed through the Senate, but didn't get it through the House. So, in a sense, this is really more an elite versus public fight. In other words, what you're describing is a real thing, but it's more representative among elites, Republicans often, as well as Democrats, whereas the public, again, Republicans and Democrats don't really believe that kind of stuff.
And yet again, we just have this whole issue of immigration reform. We have the idea, Mark, that the president might grant amnesty after the elections. How big of a reality could that be?
Well, he's definitely going to do something. Basically, unilaterally, illegally, really, amnesty potentially millions of people. He already did it for about 500,000 of the so-called Dreamers, where they don't have green cards, and it's technically just a two-year thing, but it's renewable, and everybody gets it renewed. And what they get out of that is a work permit, driver's license, Social Security number, ability to travel abroad and then be let back in. All of that, basically everything that a green card would give you except a path to citizenship. So I call it a green card light. He's given it to 500,000 people already, and before the end of this year, he's talking about giving it to several million more. The question is, will Congress actually stand up for its own prerogatives? regardless of what they think about immigration, this is not something the president has the authority to do. But if Congress lets him get away with it, then, you know, he gets away with it.
Well, that's the fascinating part about this. What, Mark, can you give us your thoughts on the whole move that of these folks that were here through no fault of their own? Their parents came here illegally. They're not citizens. And the whole Dreamers, your thoughts on the Dream movement, because we hear so much about that, and it's not unfair. They're Americans and everything else, and yet in reality they're not.
Yeah, I mean, there's a core of a truth there, a little kernel of truth, and that is that, you know, somebody brought here as an illegal alien very young, not as a teenager, which is what the Dream Act covers, people who came here as teenagers. That's ridiculous. I have teenagers. You know, they're already Americans, and if we went and snuck into Mexico, they'd still be psychologically and emotionally Americans the rest of their lives. But people who came here as infants and toddlers and really did spend their entire childhood here, you know, there's an argument to make for amnesty and kids like that. But there's all, but it's not the Dream Act, because the Dream Act doesn't do that, and the Dream Act also doesn't have anything to offset the bad results that any amnesty, even one that you know, we sort of might think is justifiable, any amnesty creates as a magnet to new illegal aliens. Just as quickly, one, any kind of Dream Act that could be defensible has to have enforcement provisions in it too, to make sure there's no kids like this 10 years down the road in the same position. And secondly, we have to make sure that none of these, if kids get amnesty through the Dream Act, something like it, none of their relatives ever get to immigrate legally. And that's not what's in the Dream Act as it exists. So until it has changes like that, it's not legitimate.
And yet we have the propaganda that we have to do something. Mark, you've authored for a moratorium on illegal and legal immigration for quite some time. Is that a reality in the PC world that we live in today?
Well, I got to say, I think we're you know, we're moving very slowly, but we're moving in the right direction. I mean, on just the enforcement part, on stopping illegal immigration, we're actually doing better than we used to. You know, this administration is kind of treading water and actually going backwards in some enforcement areas. But, you know, through the Clinton and Bush administrations, we had slow, uneven, but real improvement in some areas of enforcement. So we're moving in the right direction. And as far as reducing legal immigration, I see the way this playing out eventually is a deal where some of the illegals get amnesty, the ones who've been here a long time and they're not rapists or drug dealers, in exchange for cutting legal immigration substantially for the future.
Mark Akorian with the Center for Immigration Studies. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Who's leading the opposition right now, sir, in the Congress?
Opposition, you mean who's on the right side or who's on the wrong side?
Who's on our side?
Yeah. The most prominent person is Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama. He has been hitting this issue repeatedly. He is intensely committed to it, and also he's not a showboater who's interested in running for president or anything like that. He just sees this as his responsibility as a lawmaker, and he's got really top-notch staff. They hit this issue constantly. So Jeff Sessions really has emerged as the leader of the pro-borders, and I'd even say more than that, pro-American worker tendency in Congress. And then there's some other congressmen. Senator Lamar Smith is probably one of the best ones in the House of Representatives. But the one who works on it every day, day in, day out, is Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama.
Well, that is good to know when you think about this. Now, when we're taking a look at the children that have come in, do we know where they are?
Well, a lot of them we do. Some of them we don't. The administration, what they did was process these kids, and then just deliver them free of charge to their illegal alien relatives in the United States. Basically, the government completed the smuggling process that their family members had started by paying smugglers to bring the kids here, because the kids were not unaccompanied. There are no kids who are unaccompanied, not one. So the government does know where they are. They delivered them to their illegal immigrant relatives. So they not only know where the kids are, they know where the family members are, but they're not telling us beyond the kind of general information about what states they're in. What you're seeing, though, is the school systems that they've now, you know, gone to really are finding out where these kids are, because there, you know, there's dozens of kids, you know, in a school showing up that nobody expected. They don't know what to do with them. They don't know any English. A lot of cases, they don't even know Spanish very well. If they're from Guatemala, they're Indians from the highlands, a lot of them. So, you know, what we're seeing, in other words, the people who know where these kids are is the federal government, which isn't really giving much information, but also the local schools, which don't have any idea what to do about it. They just have, they're just sort of left holding the bag.
I was going to say, how realistic is it to expect these schools to educate these kids?
Yeah, not really, honestly. There's one town, Lynn, Massachusetts, outside Boston. We sponsored an event with the mayor of there, who has a lot of Guatemalan illegals showing up. And what they initially did was have evening classes, because most of these so-called unaccompanied children are, in fact, 16 and 17 years old. They're almost all teenagers. So what they did is they had night classes, because a lot of them are working. In fact, a lot of them are 19 and 20. They just lie about their age, and they just come in and get a job. So they have night classes for them. And then the ACLU or somebody sued and said, no, no, that's not the same. You can't have night classes for them. You have to put them in regular classes with 14-year-old girls, you know, with a 21-year-old Central American illegal alien. That's what they're having to do. There's no way these kids are getting much of an education. And the part of the problem for a lot of towns, depending on what state you're in, is your money from the state for schools depends on how your test scores in your school are.
Right.
So these places that are getting lots of Central Americans, their test scores are going to go down, so they're going to even get less money, even though they have more kids.
Thank you, No Child Left Behind.
Exactly, yep.
You know, you've done so much research in the past. I have to hit you with this. How much is the burden of the illegals impacting our education system as a whole, not just the recent influx, but in the last 5 to 10 years?
Well, I mean, I don't have a number for that on top of my head, but it's, you know, it's the extra costs that are imposed on schools is in the billions of dollars. There's no question about it. And what's interesting is that two things. First of all, they're in the school districts that can least afford it, both financially and educationally. In other words, the school districts that are already in trouble are doing a lousy job of educating the kids they already have, and then they're getting an extra burden. The other thing is they're not getting any much, if any, extra money for this. The federal government is the one that has failed by not enforcing the law, in fact, even welcoming illegal aliens to come across the border, but is not helping pay for the consequences of its bad policies. So the school districts are getting hit. The hardest hit school districts are getting hit the worst by this flow of illegal immigrants, as well as the U.S.-born kids of adult illegal aliens.
And here in Idaho, that's a big issue. It's funny, I have a chance to travel to a lot of these schools. We go to a school once a week, and I remember talking to an administrator. He goes, well, you know, we have to keep them safe, a safe place. And I go, a safe place from what? Deportation? That's not going to happen. You know, this perceived fear that the big bad government's going to get these folks, we're supplementing their education. We're augmenting their assimilation, even though they're here illegally.
Yeah, I mean, there's very little chance that it was close to 70,000 so-called unaccompanied minors. In other words, teenagers smuggled here by their relatives in the past fiscal year. You know, if more than a couple thousand of them end up being deported, I'll be surprised. In fact, if any of them end up being deported, I'll be surprised. So far, not a single one has been deported. Some, a few hundred of the people who came over as family units, mainly single moms with kids, and that were younger kids in those cases, some of them, a couple hundred, have been deported. But that's it. There were thousands. There are something like, again, 65,000-70,000 of them, not the unaccompanied ones, but the moms with kids. And only a couple hundred have actually been made to go home. So the likelihood that any big share of this border surge from the summer that the president basically welcomed and encouraged, any big share of these people are going to be sent home is a fantasy.
Mark, please stand by. More coming up next. 580-5436 if you have a question. 619, let's get you to work safely.
I have enough problems fighting the drug cartels with my deputies and illegal immigration here, and we do not need unaccompanied juveniles flown into our state, compliments of President Obama.
This is illegal. It's got to stop.
Right,
it's
already
today.
Food for your brain. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
6:25, Kevin Miller in the morning. Mark Kerkorian with us, Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, for people that want more information about your group, tell us a little bit about what y'all do and how they can help.
We're a think tank, a research group, works in Washington. Our website is cis.org, and we're the only research group on the pro-borders immigration enforcement side of the debate. I mean, we have a point of view, but we don't do, we don't lobby Congress, and we don't have members who, tell people to write your congressman, that kind of thing. What we do is things like this: public education, publish reports, have panel discussions, and all of that stuff is on our website at cis.org.
Let's talk a little bit about law enforcement. You just heard the clip from that sheriff in Arizona. What is the situation like on the border as far as lawlessness?
Well, it's in some respects it's better than it was, say, 10 years ago. Other respects, it hasn't really improved. The flow of people, the number of people coming over, has been growing the past couple of years as the economy has slightly, anyway, improved, and as word has gotten out that the Obama administration is not serious about enforcement. But the numbers are still lower than they were at the absolute peak when it was just totally out of control. So, it's a little better than it was, but it's the idea that it's somehow fixed, that, the border is basically under control, which is the president's contention, is laughable. I mean, there's two facts that really stand out. First is the Border Patrol is bigger than it used to be. It really is. It's twice the size it was 10 years ago, but it's still smaller than the New York Police Department. The whole Border Patrol, not just for the Mexican border, but for the entire country, the Canadian border, everything, fewer people, a lot fewer people than the NYPD. And the other thing is the fencing. There is fencing along some parts of the border, but most of it is what they call vehicle barriers. It's like 3 feet high, and it's to keep cars from driving straight across the border. But your grandma can hop over them. In fact, I have pictures of myself hopping over those so-called fences. And, it's clear that, this administration certainly isn't really all that comfortable or serious with the idea of enforcing the border, let alone the actual actions it's undertaking. They just don't think that it's right to keep people out of the United States if they want to come here.
And yet we have Jan Brewer and others that are under siege. It amazes me today that this isn't hyperbole, Mark, that there's this county in Arizona where the government puts a sign up saying we can't guarantee your safety because they've had problems with coyotes and traffickers and the narco-terrorists, and this is in America.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got pictures of myself standing next to those signs. There's a bunch of them. It's not just one. They're all over the place. In fact, a few years ago, I led a group to part of southern Arizona, some federal, national monument, national park type of places. And their policy was that you couldn't go down there unless you were accompanied by armed guards. Guys with long guns. They had one at the front of our group, one at the back. I mean, it was pretty serious. Now, things have calmed down, like I said, since 2005, 6, 7, when it was really out of control. But it's still dangerous. And you're right. The idea that you should have to worry about your physical safety, not because of, some mugger, but because your government can't control the borders of our country, really is absurd.
So is there anyone that has a solution? Is there really a difference between the Republicans and Democrats when it comes to immigration?
Well, when you're talking about the leadership, the Republican leadership, they're not very good. They're not really much better than the Democrats. They're almost like, they're Me Too Democrats, where they want what the Democrats want. They just want it, a little slower or a little less or with a few more guarantees about security. So in some sense, no, there isn't a difference, but really there are at the rank and file level in Congress. In other words, ordinary kind of backbencher congressmen who aren't in the leadership. That's where you see Republicans, and only Republicans, unfortunately, who really are serious about controlling immigration, not just the border with Mexico, but the whole immigration system. And you used to have some Democrats like that, too, years ago, but they're all gone. And it's unfortunate because this isn't really a partisan issue. This is not a right-left thing. This is an up versus down thing. This is patriotic public versus a post-patriotic kind of globalist elite. And there are plenty of patriotic Democrats, ordinary people. The problem is their elected officials in Washington, they don't seem to represent them.
Mark, a final couple questions here at 580KIDO. Number one, is there any way to gauge when these people come over, how many diseases they have? We heard when these kids came over, there were diseases that we had conquered long ago in America. In fact, we didn't know how to deal with them because it had been so long since anyone here had had them because of vaccinations and health procedures.
That was definitely a problem, but you know, there were some problems. There were, you know, skin parasites that some of our Border Patrol people got, something called scabies. There's other diseases that have come from Central America even earlier than this border surge. Something called Chagas, which is a parasite. They now ask you about it when you give blood at the Red Cross because it's now so pervasive and it's a really horrible disease. It like makes your organs explode. It's just awful. And tuberculosis is the other thing that really has resurged because of immigration. But you know, in some sense, this is what you're going to see because the kind of countries whose people want to leave and move somewhere else are the kind of countries that have these kind of horrible diseases. If you're in a country that doesn't have horrible diseases, it's probably not a place you want to leave anyway. So in a sense, this is something we're going to have to deal with if we're going to have high levels of immigration. There's really no way around it.
And your thoughts on the Mexican government?
Well, you know, people often say the Mexican government, you know, isn't doing enough to control its border, and they have a responsibility, you know, to keep people from illegally sneaking to the United States. And I'd say, you know, to some degree, maybe, but enforcing our laws is our business. Mexican government has to deal with Mexico's interests, and they seem to be doing that a lot better than our government is defending our interests. In the long term, I'm kind of hopeful. I mean, you know, I can't assess whether the current president there is actually going to succeed in his attempts at reforming the country. But we should very much hope he does. He's trying to reform the oil industry and education and all of that, all of which is completely screwed up. I mean, if you think our country's screwed up, man. But Mexico should be a rich country. It's got lots of resources, lots of people. They obviously work hard because they come here and work hard. You know, the problem is their elites are corrupt and not public-spirited. They're you know, in it for themselves rather than for improving the country. It looks like they've made some progress in that direction, and we should all keep our fingers crossed because we want a rich, prosperous, functioning Mexico, because then the Central Americans will sneak into Mexico and want to stay there instead of keep going into the United States.
And as you've said, their immigration a lot tougher than ours. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There we have it, our great friend Mark Krikorian, Center for Immigration Studies. If you'd like to help them or get more research, CIS.org. Kevin Miller in the morning coming up. We'll talk a little bit about Ebola. There's something to wake up to. Ebola, by the way, congratulations to Peyton Manning for breaking Brett Favre's record last night. But in reality, I mean, how tough is it? Yes, Peyton Manning's a tough quarterback. Certainly we should give him props for this. But the rules have been changed so much to favor the quarterback. It makes you wonder what Dan Marino or John Elway would have done in this era. Anyway, we'll talk about those stories and more next at 580KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
In the-
a legal battle over the Equal Rights Ordinance. The city calls this sermon subpoena appropriate. The pastors say they've gone too far.
At Pastor Hernan Castano's Alief Church, the Bible classes are intimate and the sermons believed sacred.
For a city government to step into the churches and ask pastors to turn in their sermons and all their speeches, it's gone too far.
As part of discovery defending itself against the lawsuit over the Equal Rights Ordinance, the city's legal department has a long list of requests for documents and communications, among them sermons given by five Houston-area pastors who have opposed the ordinance. Pastor Castano is one of them and believes sermons are protected by the First Amendment.
This is not what America, the nation, is about. And if they want to know what we preach, what we say, we do our live streaming services. We preach the Bible. We teach the Bible.
But in the legal battle over the anti-discrimination ordinance that has included protests and petition drives, the city says sermons are fair game. Signatures were required at churches, according to City Attorney Dave Feldman. And, quote, if they choose to do this inside the church, choose to do this from the pulpit, then they open the door to the questions being asked.
Escondido.
He says Pastor Castano is just part of what's routine during a lawsuit. Castano disagrees.
They want to put fear in our hearts. They want to stop the people from expressing the right that they have to oppose abuse of power in government, to oppose something that is not right.
And yesterday, those suing the city who represent the pastors filed a motion to quash these subpoenas. We'll let you know what a court decides.
There we have it, a story that has been burning up social media for quite some time. And as I've said before, and it won't be covered anywhere else, and it will be covered here for the time being at 580KIDO because it's not very politically correct, is that you have an issue involving the freedom of speech. And that's pretty much been thrown out the window. You can't say anything that anybody has talked about being offensive. And we took a look at the coronation of gay marriage in Idaho last week. You would think that it was the founding of the Republic. Really. And I don't know if there's bias in the local media, but I could say this. I was very disappointed that not one of the local major outlets, when they always talk about, well, we have to get the other side of the story, not one person interviewed anybody else that was against same-sex marriage. Certainly, they could have interviewed people that in 2006 organized and defended marriage. You know, the thousands of people that voted? You remember them. They could have certainly been invited to come on here, whether we took calls from this show or myself. I used to do that for the networks all the time. But they chose not to. They chose to promote an agenda. And now that agenda is law. So be it. But when we say that this is over, it's not over. Not in a long shot. Because just as civil unions have turned to marriage, now it will be that we need to be married in churches. And we see this in Houston, where we have pastors being subpoenaed for fighting against what they believe is wrong. Now, would they do that if this was about race? Well, I don't think they did that in the 60s in the South. But now you have people receiving subpoenas for what they teach in church. And it will start innocuously, probably on television, just like everything else does. And if you don't think that television and mainstream media influences people, we'll tell you a little bit more about, you know, the latest attack on guns. But really, this is the deal here. This is the deal at 580-5436 that churches will be next. And if your church does not comply, never mind if it's of the teachings of the Lord, never mind if it goes against the teachings of the faith, over 2,000 years or thousands of years or even earlier than that, it's not going to matter. Because you will comply or you will be eradicated. And your church will be taxed to the nth degree. You'll be vilified. Just see what it would be like when you see a pundit on television who disagrees with same-sex marriage. If you disagree with same-sex marriage, you're a bigot, you're a homophobe, you're this. I've been called that here at the broadcast center. Now, it might be a friendly smack, but it's still a smack. And I believe at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, that the churches will be next. We need prayer for the churches, certainly. Something to think about. And if you don't think that the government is trying to brainwash you, as they have brainwashed us to be more accepting of same-sex behavior, same-sex marriages, remember this statement.
We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
Coming up, is it entertainment or propaganda? The war on guns gets heated up. We'll tell you about it next. 647, 47 degrees, 580-KIDO. Let's get you to work safe.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's go to the phones. We go to Steve in Nampa at 580-KIDO. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Are you aware of the city of Coeur d'Alene's threats to two Christian ministers? It's a married couple in Coeur d'Alene that run a marriage chapel. But if they don't perform gay marriages, which they've declined to do, to fine them and sue them.
I think I've heard a little of the story, but not in depth. So this is happening in Idaho.
I heard about it Saturday night, and it is going on at this point in time.
Well, I'll have to check up into that story. Do you know anything else about it?
I just know that not really. I have been trying to find more information. I just think, you know, that as you said, first the city of in Texas, and now we've got one here in Idaho.
Yeah, no surprise there that the churches would be next.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought that it would be. I've been trying to let people know about it, find out more about it myself, and I thought you might be a good person to tell.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. We'll get right on it.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Take care. Let's go to Gary in Nampa with Kevin Miller at 580-KIDO. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Kevin. I thought I'd take a minute and maybe clarify the perception that people have within regards of the church situation with the pastors. That being is that it's not a question of exercising free speech. The free speech is that you can say anything you want, but you're held accountable for it. The status of the pastors within their respective churches within regards to the subpoenas, they're only applicable to those churches that have 501c3 standing. Ergo, they consider themselves as non-profit corporations that own assets, etc., outside the physical grounds of the church itself. Anybody that has any church that does not have the 501c3 standing, the motion within regards to the subpoenas, the motion to quash will be granted. Those that have 501c3 standing, they will be obliged not to have a political speech. It's just that simple.
Right, but on the other hand, I'm sure there are a lot of churches that own facilities outside their church grounds, if you will.
When they do, they don't want to pay taxes on it. Their 501c3 makes it tax exempt.
Right.
And that's the reason. They go 501c3.
Right, and then they can lose that. Gary, thank you for the clarification.
Surely.
All right, going to the Coeur d'Alene situation, we have in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, city officials have laid down the law to Christian pastors within their community, telling them bluntly via an ordinance that if they refuse to marry homosexuals, they will face jail time and fines. The dictate comes on the heels of a battle with Donald and Evelyn Knapp, ordained ministers who own the Hitching Post wedding chapel in the city but oppose gay marriage. A federal judge recently ruled that the state's ban on gay marriage was unconstitutional, while the city of Coeur d'Alene has passed an ordinance that prevents discrimination based on sexual preference. The Supreme Court recent refusal to take on gay rights appeals from five states has opened the doors for same-sex marriages. The Knapps were asked to marry a gay couple, according to the Daily Caller. On Friday, a same-sex couple asked to be married by the Knapps, and the Knapps politely declined. The Knapps now face 180 days in jail and a $1,000 fine for each day they declined to celebrate the same-sex weddings. Why would you want to be married by someone who does not believe in your lifestyle? Well, again, you either conform or the government will make sure that you conform. Now, is that fair? Does religion, having a religious belief that man and woman are the couple that were created by God, does that get in the way of the law? Apparently not. And this is in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. How many people, like our friend Alma, would stand up to these folks and say, I'll take the $1,000, I'll take the 180 days in jail for their beliefs? We know about the people that own the flower shop in Oregon or Washington, out of business now. You either conform or they run you. Is this the type of America that you grew up in? 658, 46 degrees in Meridian. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work safe. 659, Kevin Miller in the morning. Boy, what a volatile week for the markets. What does that mean for you and your money? We'll talk a little bit about that. Plus, Ebola, how big of an impact is it having on airplane stocks, oil markets, and just basic medical stocks? And if you have something in your mutual funds or 401ks, we'll give you that information from our friend Dave Petzo of Petzo Financial coming up. And in the 8 o'clock hour, best-selling author Robert Spencer will join us to talk a little bit about the ISIS threat in America. And thinking about that, one issue that I think it'll be our next crusade, if you will, bringing to light the lack of textbooks in schools. That used to be...
Judy Emmett.